Hey guys, John Henry Spann here with Honest to God. Thank you so much for listening. If you have a second to spare and you wouldn't mind dropping a few dollars in the old tip jar, please think about donating to the Quest Atlanta. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Josh. Today on Honest to God, we discuss medicine, Hillsdale College, and the study of the soul from the perspective of a psychologist. Discover the real goal of undergraduate education in forming the whole picture of the capital T truth. All this and more coming up on AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God on AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Super pumped to be here today. We got Josh.
Hello.
Rocking and rolling. Really happy to have you. We got producer Julian.
I'm pushing buttons and trying to make us sound good, man. And doing the best I can.
I don't know if you could, the camera picked it up, but behind you are about 30,000 ladybugs.
No, it's not showing up in the camera.
Okay, they're all right there now. They used to be all over the place. Now they're all right behind you.
Reminds me of the show that we did with me and my wife in this room, in the Ark, before the renovation.
Yeah.
So we'll link in the show notes the episode about... What was it? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It came up, What's on Your Mind, where we just reminisced about college.
College, yeah. The Southern Catholic episode. That's what it was.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Southern Catholic?
Just through Joe.
Oh, so that's right. We have a mutual friend. Yeah, yes. I'm a fan of Quickie. He needs to be on the show.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, right, Quickie was a buddy of mine in college who apparently was instrumental in your conversion. Did you convert?
He sure. I didn't convert, okay. But it kind of sort of like a reversion, more just like growing in my faith because it was right before my confirmation. So
heck yeah, man.
But he was a real good figure. Had all the sorts of philosophical conversations I'm sure you had with him too.
Well, it was funny because in college he was like 5 years older than the rest of us.
Oh yeah.
But at the time, right, a 23 year old or whatever might as well have been 47. And we just. So every old man joke ever was directed at Quickie.
Good.
4 years. And as always, to my right, stretching off into a void of infinite nothingness, is show notes Benny. Just a tentacled eldritch being that defies human understanding, that exists in five dimensions somehow. We can only perceive three, but it seems angry and it's going to record show notes for us. So we're excited about that. Big shout out. Thanks, show notes Benny. All right, man. So this is cool. We're going to be talking about I literally have medical stuff written down here. So it's as in-depth as I've got it.
Sounds good.
But I really want to dig in. But first, would you mind leading us in prayer? Are you okay doing that?
Absolutely. That sounds good. Yeah.
Whenever you're ready.
So in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Dear Lord God, our Father, you placed us here and created us that we might do good work and that we might be a sign of your glory in this world. And then you sent your Son to redeem us and to bring us back to yourself. And as an instrument in that, you send your Spirit, and the Holy Spirit then can fill our hearts and our minds so that we might know and love you. And I pray that the Holy Spirit would be with us now as we have this conversation, and so that we might proclaim your gospel and the good news of your love. Amen.
Amen. That was really good. Solid prayer.
Thank you.
I'm going to give it like a... give it like a 92.
Ooh.
Just right out of the gate.
Wow.
Yeah. I understand that it's probably, I probably shouldn't grade all the prayers.
I don't know.
I started doing it a few months ago and now I kind of like it. So I just started it. Points for the whole salvation history piece.
I like to fit in the whole thing. I feel like that's very Catholic. If you can kind of get a picture of the whole and all of the parts.
So, I like that.
Yeah.
I might've talked about this on air. I apologize if I have before, but, somebody shared with me a meme the other day that was awesome. It was like a Protestant preacher asking his wife to go get milk. And then it was him saying, "Oh, Emily wife, dearest Emily wife, can you just go to the store, Emily wife, and give me," and it was done sort of in that cadence, sort of your Baptist.
Oh, good father. Prayer. Yeah. Yeah.
And then somebody below it had said, it'd be cooler if it was Catholic. And the whole thing was, "Emily, only person to whom I am sacramentally bound, bearer
right.
of my children, love
wife
of my
mine.
Life, I beseech thee to pick up milk from the store. You know I am a lowly being." And it was neat. I enjoyed all the back
awesome.
And forth.
If you really liked Josh's prayer, hit that like button.
Ooh, say that early. I like that. I like that because there's always a, what is it, 7 minutes? In the first 7 minutes, you're supposed to give your pitch or
give
something?
Give the pitch, that's right.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, please, go ahead. What am I supposed to say? Like, subscribe, all that stuff.
Share.
Yes.
We like sharing.
Stream endlessly on all your devices on separate accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah, get a VPN, multiples.
Help us proclaim God's word.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I'm really excited about this. We're going to dive into all things medical. I want to hear how you're credentialed and all that here in a second. And you can incorporate this into if you want into this next question. But do you have three fun facts for us about yourself? Can you tell us? It's normally our intro, like, give us some background on who you are, Josh, the medical guy.
Well, I have a beautiful girlfriend from New Mexico.
Nice.
Who I love very much. Let's see. So that's one. I went to Hillsdale.
Heck yeah. Huge fan. I'm going to go off on Hillsdale in a second. I'm a big fan of Hillsdale.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds good. I it's kind of lame to mention like where you went to college for a fun fact, I feel like, but I love it so much and I enjoyed my time there and I feel like it's such a part of me that it's got to be one of them.
Well, and also it being Hillsdale and not some big state school that's got, right, you know, 30,000 freshmen or anything. That's cool.
Yeah. And then another fun fact. What's something that's a little bit more fun about
me? Don't
have
to be that fun.
Yeah, well, I had a Jeep, but I'm getting rid of that because it's not as reliable as it could be.
That's fair. Yeah. My issue with Jeeps has always just been like carrying capacity, right? Like I've always drove a pickup truck. I drove a 98 Silverado until like two years ago. And finally it got to a point where like I'm not mechanically inclined, but I can tinker, right? And the four-wheel drive transmission went out and I just can't operate, right? We're on a few hundred acres and 90% of the property you can't get to without four-wheel drive. And I had to do it. I thought about a Jeep and then I said, well, I can't carry all my
stuff.
That's
the problem. Yeah.
We do the farm thing. Right?
You can go anywhere, but can't take anything with you. Yeah.
So I'm finishing. Sorry, speaking about going anywhere, this has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. I've got about 15 minutes left in my audiobook on this guy's trip down the entire Appalachian Trail. And it's excellent. I'm all about this book. It's been very good. The guy's kind of a degenerate as a human being, but it's super interesting.
What's it called?
Good question. Where's the next shelter, maybe?
Okay.
And I finished not too long ago, A Walk in the Woods. It's another great Appalachian
I've heard of that one.
Book. Yeah, it's very good. Maybe one day. We might do that. Be fun.
Cool.
All right, well, we're not going to talk about the Appalachian Trail today. We're going to dig into your brain a little bit because of your expertise, particularly in the medical world. Can you tell us why? Can you tell us why we're talking to Josh today about medical stuff?
Sure. So first I'd preface by saying, like, definitely not an expert at this point in medicine, aiming to become an expert, in particular in psychiatry. So that's the area of medicine I'm most interested in. In order to do that, you've got to go to medical school first.
Right.
And medical school is where you get your medical doctorate, MD. And that's a general study of medical science and the medical arts. And it's kind of analogous to a liberal arts education in a way, where it's like before you specialize in an area of study where you might like go and get a PhD, you would go and get an education where it's a wide ranging, broad education to get a full picture of a full and encapsulated picture of the truth before you would go and find a particular part of that truth and become an expert in it.
Sure.
So like right now I'm learning the kind of full picture of the human person as we understand them physically.
Right.
So understanding the human body and all the different pathologies that can affect the human body. And then eventually I'll go and become an expert in, hopefully become an expert in the mind, as best I can. Of course, that's a kind of a hubris to think that you could really be an expert in the mind.
Soon I will be an expert in the mind.
Right. Yeah.
So why psychiatry?
A lot of reasons, but ultimately the biggest one is just that, like, I really like talking to people and I like trying to sort out what leads people to suffer and the way through that suffering. And I think that psychiatry gives you a particular opportunity to deal with very acute human suffering very directly.
Sure.
So I think that's a good way to encounter Christ because we encounter him in the crucifix and the crucifixion. And so you can encounter him through the poor and through the needy in their suffering. So
no, I dig it, man. That's awesome. That's really cool. I know a number of Catholics who were working in the medical world, right, who were students who were trained to be doctors and whatever, and then COVID happened And it seems like a lot of them ended up sort of dipping out after that.
I've heard about that. Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who struggled with that for a while. He ended up staying in, but a lot of people did.
Yeah. Yeah. And why? Can you get into what the struggle was or what the...
Well, so I personally haven't really encountered that very much yet, but from my understanding, it looks like it has a lot to do with, a couple things. So one of the things is just an increased volume of patients, just people who are, sick due to COVID, because, sure. There's a lot out there about COVID and varying levels of panic and lack of concern. Mm-hmm. But ultimately it still is, it's a concerning disease, and it's something that mm-hmm. has, really changed our picture of the health conditions that face people most generally.
Right.
So like there were a lot more people who were presenting to the hospitals. And so a lot of people were starting to get burned out as a result of mm-hmm. more people. But then I think another thing, and one of the things that I found myself facing, and I think that you face even in the non-medical community, is kind of this burnout due to bureaucratic oversight.
Oh, interesting.
So I think that probably had something to do with it. This is me speculating. So right. I haven't talked to people who actually like dropped out due to COVID, but I know that like COVID has led to all sorts of restrictions in the way that we learn and in the way that we actually operate in the world that are kind of inhuman, like wearing a mask all the time.
Sure.
Doing all of your classes over online. And so I'd imagine things like that are probably a lot of what led people away from studying.
Yeah, and I'll let you run with this because I'm just sort of giving my understanding sort of from outside. I'm not in the nitty gritty of this on a regular basis. From a lot of the conversations I've had with people, it seems like there's been a major loss in, I guess what you'd call institutional trust.
There's COVID. Big time. Oh my goodness. Right. Yes. Yeah.
And I think, and feel free to argue with me, once again, I'm not the expert. I think a lot of it is warranted. I really
yes,
do.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wouldn't call myself an expert in this, but I definitely have been giving it a lot of thought. And I've tried to talk a little bit to some of my colleagues at the medical school about it. I think that it's a net negative that there has been a loss in trust, in the sense that like a loss in trust makes it so that, people who actually are more deserving of trust don't receive it. Usually because someone else oftentimes, betrayed that trust in another individual. And so like we've had a really, what I think we could call a public health crisis, especially when it comes to, our ability to trust the medical establishment isn't the right word. I guess the medical authorities in the government,
yeah.
basically in the NIH with Anthony Fauci and all the people who are kind of in charge of the medical advice that led to the lockdowns and a lot of the things
right.
that the government decided to do, which were ultimately the domain of the practical, the domain of the government rather than the domain of the art of medicine. And so that, I think that there's an interesting discussion to be had there about, okay, we know that maybe we can decrease transmission by wearing masks, but is that actually good for the people?
Is it
like,
worth
is that actually
the cost,
good
right?
for our nation? Right. So not to get derailed though, I think that it makes a lot of sense that people don't trust the medical industry when the person who is kind of the face of medicine and the face of public health, who's Anthony Fauci,
right.
very obviously now, and in a way that people like completely ignore in certain circles, at least, we've basically caught him in lying.
Multiple lies, yeah.
Like multiple times about exactly the thing that's of the most concern to
right.
the American people and people more generally with respect to COVID, because they were basically lying, saying, well, there's no way that COVID came out of a lab. And they were silencing people and calling them crazy for saying that. And then it turns out that almost certainly COVID came out of a lab in Wuhan, China.
Right.
And also that same person, Anthony Fauci, approved funding for that lab.
Right.
And we know this now. It's been documented. And somehow we haven't talked about this in medical school. And despite the fact that we're always talking about how it's a big problem that we've lost the trust of the people and that there's a lack of trust in the medical system, what ends up happening is there's this kind of almost sort of, there can be this self-righteous attitude that comes about where it's like, oh, they don't understand the benefits of vaccination. They're just still like, they're all caught up in like the autism concerns, which that's right. A whole different discussion, but like they're caught up in this other thing, not even they trying to understand.
Pretty hard.
Exactly. Yeah. That, thank you. Yeah. That's exactly what happens. They straw man it. And then they fail to understand that like, we actually have a serious problem when it comes to trust.
Right.
We have a problem with trust because there was a wrong that was done to people generally by the public health authorities, and we need to address that. Yeah, so
I had somebody make the analogy the other day of elevator technicians, right? Let's say that right now in the United States of America, randomly elevators start snapping their cables and people fall into there pretty regularly.
Yeah. Right?
And so the average person is all of a sudden pretty skeptical about hopping on elevators.
Understandable.
And then we're being barked at about how what are you talking about?
All the elevators are safe,
right? And it's saying, who are you going to believe, me or your own lying eyes, right? Those, that kind of situation. And it's bizarre. I think it's been good in a lot of ways. It's made a lot of people more skeptical about things.
That's true. Skepticism's helpful.
But at the same time, I think it is a major sign of an unhealthy society when we're all saying we can't trust our quote unquote authorities, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how we come back from that. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
How we come back from that? Oh, that's a good question.
Do we come back from that? I'm pretty jaded at this point.
Yeah, well, I think so. One thing that I find is that oftentimes when there's an intractable problem, that the answer to it is to be found on a very local, individual level.
Sure.
So I think the way that we come back from something like that is by building trust with an individual physician. Mm-hmm. And you can build that trust building that trust as a physician with individual patients.
Right.
And so it's a hard work and it's not a fun answer in the sense that it's like, oh, I wish I could build this grand plan for a way to like fix this big problem. But I think that generally the solutions to these types of problems is going to be in the individual encounter of the physician and patient.
That's
building
fair.
Trust there.
I mean, that's sort of the situation where we're in. We have a doctor that we really like, and she's a Catholic doctor. She's got 80,000 children, and it's great.
That's awesome.
Right? And she's like the doctor I trust with my kids. Right?
That's great. Yeah.
But I hate to be in that position still, right? There is that little sting of, sure do wish I could just believe what the quote unquote authorities are telling me about X, Y, or Z. But I think we've gotten so cynical and jaded from the last, 4 years or so that's almost, I don't know if we're ever going to get that back. And it's not just the medical profession either, right? I mean, it's our school systems.
Psychological too.
It's across the spectrum of our, the supposed expert class. I feel, and I feel like a lot of people feel, just totally betrayed by them, and we're in this weird situation. So I'm not, once again, I'm not attacking you as the resident medical guy. And it's Josh's fault. I don't want to make that super clear. The reason we don't trust medicine.
Well, I'm going to chime in since we're talking about trust of the medical community. And if you are listening and you feel that you've been betrayed by Fauci, I want you to comment down below. Fauci lied. Comment down below.
Nice.
And maybe you agree. Maybe you're a doctor listening. You don't like what we're saying. Add that in there and we'll have a discussion about it in the comments.
If there's one place where reasonable discussion always takes place, it is YouTube comment sections.
Naturally.
And so we would really, we encourage a healthy discussion in the comments. very good. So, okay, in that same vein, because we're on the first half of the show, and we're just swinging for the fences today.
Sounds fun.
Let's, you brought it up, so it's not my fault. I'd love to dig into the vaccine thing.
Yeah.
If you're comfortable.
Well,
you're
so okay, I don't actually know very much specifically about the vaccine itself, the data behind it, like behind its efficacy and the side effect profile and everything. Right. The little that I have heard is basically, it ends up being fairly moderate compared to what you hear on either side of like the internet sort of hype about it.
Right.
But it's also, it's not, that being said, like that means it's not as cut and dry. It's not so clear as people might have you think. And I think the best example of this is the pretty clear and consistent increased risk of endocarditis.
Right.
So dangerous inflammation of the heart muscle or the endocardium inside of the heart muscle. But the dangerous inflammation of the heart that can actually lead to death.
Sure.
It can be fatal. This isn't something that's common at all. When it comes to the COVID vaccine, you can get the vaccine and in all likelihood, it's not going to cause that. But vaccines often have side effects and they're pretty much always going to have some
very rare side effect.
Sure.
The whole conversation about rare side effects is a complicated one mm-hmm. for medical professionals, and I think one that a lot of them get afraid of because mm-hmm. they don't necessarily trust that their patients are going to be able to like weigh the data very well. I think it's actually best to trust the intellect of the person that you're caring for and right. to give them that information. But that being said, like they've made various decisions about whether or not to communicate that information. And how much to integrate that into like our decisions about who should be vaccinated and when. Ultimately, I was talking to my roommate about this. Ultimately, I think it probably is wise for people who are going to be around higher risk groups, so people who are immunocompromised and, right. and the elderly. It's probably wise for even young men mm-hmm. to receive the COVID vaccine. But there should be a conversation about whether or not we actually want to be vaccinating young right. men generally, because the young men about my age demographic, they're at a significant risk of endocarditis, probably a higher risk than any sort of negative, like serious complications of COVID. Right. So like if we're just considering those individuals, do we want to place them at risk for this benefit, which is actually, a little bit more of a vague benefit than we might right. think. It seems like it has more like 40 to 60% efficacy, I've heard. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like sure, quote sure. me on that. Yeah. Basically, things are more vague than I think people think, and we need to be talking about it in order to actually reach any sort of a conclusion about what we should do.
So can you have conversations like this out loud? Because if you're just on my perspective, right, where I'm just hearing snippets occasionally yeah. from, I don't know, talk radio and random news articles every now and then, it seems like 50% of everybody is saying, if you take the vaccine, you will die a horrible death within, you know, by the following Tuesday. And 50% are saying, no, there's nothing wrong ever with the vaccine, no matter what. Everything's great. You'll live forever if you.
Yep.
It does seem like two totally polar opposite, right, sort of arguments that are being made. Can you, as somebody who is a student who's working, right, towards this degree, this MD and all the, are these conversations like verboten when you're talking to your professors or talking to your the expert class, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, there's a good question. So can I? Yes. Mm-hmm. If I want to talk about them, I can, and I could say things. I could go and collect the data. I could bring it up. Whether or not that conversation would be like well fielded, whether people would want to have that conversation, mm-hmm. that's more of a question to me. Mm-hmm. When it comes to COVID, I don't know if I think I brought it up once, this sort of conversation, and it just didn't really go anywhere. And I've talked to another person, a member of the medical school there, about this whole topic, and we ended up mostly just talking about how nobody's talking about it.
Right.
Unfortunately, I kind of would have to answer no. Like, we don't okay. really seem to question these things very much. And that's, frankly, of all the concerns that I have with, like, the state of medical education right now and the education that I'm receiving, it's that, like, we're prompted and we're encouraged. So I want to temper this. We are encouraged to ask questions and to evaluate the evidence. There's a very strong push, and I think a really good one, to make sure that our practice of medicine is based on evidence. So based right. on empirical observations of things that happen as a result of certain causes right. in a way that's rigorous so that you can identify what cause is affecting what effect.
Sure.
So they do really emphasize that we want to evaluate that evidence and have the opportunity to talk about it and argue about it. So it's not all lost, but there are certain topics where that doesn't really happen very much.
Right.
So that's one of them.
Well, and I don't think it's just a medical thing. I mean, we've talked to,
that's true.
I've talked to multiple people yeah. in different fields of study, right? And there tends to be a sort of, I don't know, set, like, here's what we, whoever we is, yeah. believe. And maybe even more so, because it didn't sound like you're getting all the pushback that I've heard from a lot of people, right? More of a, you don't deviate from that, or you're outside of the tribe and then you're bad, which is the opposite of how science is supposed to work.
There's some accuracy to that. Yeah.
Right.
If you deviate too much, yeah, then you are kind of a little bit on the outside. And sometimes what I've realized, though, is that, like, that doesn't really matter that much to be on the outside. They're not actually going to do that much to you. And it's not like we're going to be talking about it all the time.
Right.
So, so that's one thing I'd want to like encourage anybody who's at a program, who is studying medicine or studying anything, who's at school, like the truth will set you free. And it might cause you some trouble, but it's probably not going to destroy things. So you should trust in the truth and you should proclaim it and try to bring it out, even in a context where it feels like you can't.
Yeah, so, no, totally.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break here in a minute, but I'd love to pick up. We've got a couple minutes left. I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of how you got on this trajectory to begin with, mostly because I want to sing the praises of Hillsdale College. Very seldom on this show am I going to say positive things about colleges in general, other than like a half dozen tiny little Catholic liberal arts colleges that I love. But Hillsdale is the exception, right? Because it's not Catholic. It is liberal arts. Right. And it's a killer program.
It's super great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Producer Julian, how are we looking time-wise?
Oh, you can get into it.
All right. Cool.
Okay.
So can you tell us, like, where'd you grow up? How'd you end up going to Hillsdale?
Yeah. So I grew up all over the United States. I was born in Tennessee, moved to Wyoming, Michigan, Wisconsin, and then Georgia.
Big shout out to Wyoming Catholic College in Lander.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's one of those ones on that list.
I was up there.
Half dozen.
Yeah. Last summer. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Beautiful place. I want to end up out west. Like I said, New Mexican girlfriend.
Awesome.
So.
Yeah.
Well, so we moved all over the place for different reasons each time, and then eventually landed in Blairsville, just a little bit north of here. I grew up there from like middle school, and like I said, Joe had a big impact on me. Had a big impact on me, and he taught me the faith, and I had conversations with him about like what is truth and what is goodness, and like. How kind of realized through him and through my dad, because my dad's friends with Joe and has similar conversations, had a lot of similar conversations with him. Through conversations with them, kind of started to realize the unity of the truth and how it's comprehensive and how it's something that can truly guide your life. It'll give your life all of the meaning and the fullness that it needs.
So.
And I'm somebody who I think is probably a little bit of a melancholic temperament, and I have a tendency to kind of like think on like the depths of life and like, oh, is it even meaningful and that sort of thing. So I think that the way that Joe and my dad really see the truth was really attractive to me.
That's huge.
So
it's really cool that your dad too is involved with this,
isn't it?
Thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
A lot of times you hear sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. It was my parents weren't on board, and I actually do think sometimes with young men, this was the case with me, right? Parents who are not super on fire for the faith can sometimes be a positive thing, because it's like, oh, well, I'm going to rebel. I'll teach you.
Yep, yep.
I'm going to, instead of smoking pot, I'm going to start going to church. That's how I'm going to stick my finger in your eye. Let's talk Hillsdale College, because once again, I can't shut up about how great it is. So you're having these great conversations with your dad. You're having these great conversations with our mutual friend, Joe. And I mean, similar to, it would have been when I was in high school, when I had this huge revelation that truth exists for the first
time. Right.
Like, I remember.
It's a wild one, huh?
I remember I had a Presbyterian minister who taught me an elective class, and he gave this great lecture one day on relativism, not objectivism, relativism. And I was all convinced that truth was a lie. And then the next day we came into class and he was like, you guys are all idiots. Anyway, let's talk about why everything I said is super easily refutable. Let's get down to brass tacks. And he gave this great presentation on objectivism.
That's a good way to do it.
And my brain exploded.
Yeah.
Like it blew me away. Yeah. Right. And I mean, that was really sort of the hinge point on which my life started to change trajectories in a pretty serious way. So you're in this position, you're having these conversations. How'd you pick Hillsdale, or why'd you pick Hillsdale?
Yeah. So I went to, out to Thomas Aquinas College for a camp.
In California?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Like their summer great books program? Or?
Yes.
That's I'm very right. familiar.
Oh,
yeah.
I loved it out
that's
there.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe was telling me about schools that I might want to consider, because it was coming around the time when I was going to be applying.
Cool. Was he like your youth minister?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was my youth minister, and we quickly kind of like became more like friends.
When did you graduate high school? What year?
2017.
Okay, so 2016 was World Youth Day in Panama, right?
I think so.
Because Joe and I were talking seriously about taking our youth groups down, because I was running one in Dawsonville at the time.
Cool.
To Panama, so we would have met earlier.
Yeah,
but here we are.
Okay. But here we are.
All right, so go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, that was a salient that you brought up, both Joe and my dad, because they're the ones who had the most influence on where I ended up for college. And Joe recommended like Christendom and Thomas Aquinas College were like the two ones at the top of his
two
list.
Two fantastic recommendations for the record. Yes, big sir. Shout out to Front Royal Virginia, to Christendom as well as TAC.
Yeah. Good places, yeah. And my dad had heard of Hillsdale several times on conservative radio, which I think is usually where people hear of Hillsdale, and found it in like one of these books for like where it's, this was before maybe, well, this wasn't before the internet really took off, but maybe before my dad's interest in the internet took off quite as much. So we had this book full of like recommendations for different colleges and kind of rating them. And so like just he really liked Hillsdale and really encouraged me to apply. And initially I was more interested in Thomas Aquinas College because what they offer is like an all-inclusive program. Everybody does the same classes. They all study the same things. And because of that, there's a lot of like unity in the student body. It's rooted in the Catholic faith. It's Thomas Aquinas College. So, and it's just a fantastic liberal arts program. It you get like what's the equivalent of a philosophy degree, a math degree, and like a minor in physics or something crazy.
Yeah.
So really cool place and a beautiful place too. Mm-hmm. And I went out there and of course they do the whole works while you're out there. They do all it's so much fun. They have like a dance at the end. And of course, this is one of the first times I got to like dance with girls. So,
always
so I was
a, like, okay, man,
this college thing sounds pretty cool.
Right.
And then I was basically planning on going there. And then what happened? Let's see. Then my dad basically, he still encouraged me, like, look at Hillsdale, like, apply.
Right. See you were living in Blairsville like at this point.
Yep.
Hillsdale is a heck of a lot closer.
Yeah.
It's in Mobile, right?
Mm-hmm. It's up in Michigan.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was I thinking of? Spring Hill. Sorry. Spring Hill.
I know where it's in South Central Michigan.
Oh, good. You're doing the mitten
that's
thing.
Right.
Perfect.
Yeah, the mitten thing. And I have some family up there, and my mom was a lot happier with this. Mm-hmm. So I went up and looked at it, and just something about it struck me, and I really liked it when I went up there.
Right.
And then I came back, and there was like a couple of days where I was just in turmoil because I had submitted the deposit to Thomas Aquinas College. I was going to go there, and then it was decision day. And I was just like sitting like in turmoil, didn't know where I was going to go. And then suddenly like I just was like, I'm going to go to Hillsdale. And I went to go to Hillsdale. So I feel like that's one of the moments where like the Holy Spirit kind of was 100% moving in me. So and then I ended up at Hillsdale the next year. And
was there something, sorry, about Hillsdale in contrast to TAC that was particularly like enticing?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hillsdale and Thomas Aquinas College have a lot of similarities, more similarities than differences when it comes to like how they are juxtaposed to the rest of universities these days. So like they have a lot of those similarities, but then between the two of them, they're actually like pretty different because Hillsdale is a little bit more of a normal college experience, whereas Thomas Aquinas College, you're kind of joining almost like a monastery for 4 years.
It's a very unique thing. Yeah.
It's a cool place, but a little different than the traditional college experience. I liked the idea that like at Hillsdale, I could start to make choices about what I was going to be doing.
Right.
And I think I might have even somewhat recognized my need to like be pushed to make those decisions because at Thomas Aquinas until I was done, like I didn't have any sort of choice to make about what I needed to do. But I recognized that like I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life yet, and Hillsdale would be a good place to figure out what I was going to do.
Sure.
So
they had different majors and all that over at Hillsdale, opposed to TAC.
That's right. Yeah. And so I wanted to make those decisions. But generally, yeah, it was a difference in kind of my sense about it, which normally I don't make decisions that way, but I ended up there. Yeah. So,
and tell us about your experience at Hillsdale. Cause once again, I had to make this a Hillsdale commercial, the first part.
I want to make it a Hillsdale commercial. So Hillsdale was, it was a fantastic place to go to college from the perspective of like getting to know good people.
Right.
And I think that that's one of the best things that you can gain from going to one of these really good colleges. So Hillsdale, Thomas Aquinas, Franciscan, Christendom, University of Dallas, which is where my sister is.
Yeah. Very familiar.
Fantastic schools.
I went to Groundhog a while back.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. They just celebrated that. They had a lot of fun. But like the best thing you can gain from going to a good school, and it sounds like you guys have had a similar experience at Southern Catholic.
Sure.
The best thing you can gain from going to a really good school is all of the good people that you meet there and the friends that you make. And that's not just like this cheesy sort of thing to say. It's also because like those are the people that you learn from more than you even learn from your professors.
100%. No, I've said it before on the show, right?
Yeah.
College is primarily good for community building and spouse shopping.
That's
if you do it right, those are the two biggest takeaways. You get a nice piece of paper that opens some doors for you, right, if you graduate.
That's helpful.
But primarily in terms of like what actually matters to you as a human being, as a son or daughter of God, it's building a community. And that's why it's so important to pick a good college, or at the very least, if you're going to one of these big schools, make sure they've got a solid Newman Center. Make sure they've got a solid...
Yeah.
A good community that you can plug into once you get to that college.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's proved to be like the best thing about going to Hillsdale. So I made many very good friends, really good Catholic friends, really good non-Catholic friends too. Right.
What's the breakdown Catholic versus non-Catholic at Hillsdale?
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to mention that. So I think I'd describe Hillsdale as little C Catholic. So in the sense that Catholic means universal, and what it means in that context is like a universal picture. It's all encompassing, like the universal truth. And it's not, it's little C Catholic at Hillsdale because the ethos among the faculty and in like the school's mission, and then among the student body, even more importantly, is very much focused on how we can integrate all of the learning of the individual disciplines,
right,
and the truth as we find it in chemistry or in biology or in literature or in philosophy, mm-hmm, how we can take all of these truths and build a picture of the truth that is unified and comprehensive and allows the growth of the human soul in that truth. And so I say that because, like, even though Hillsdale isn't Catholic with a big C, it's not like officially, formally Catholic, it ends up having a pretty Catholic mindset about it.
Well, and to be fair, most of our big C Catholic colleges are not even little C Catholic,
unfortunately,
right? That's a shame. And there's also a lot of converts to Catholicism that come out of Hillsdale.
Yeah. So that's actually the joke, is that, cause you mentioned percentages, like the joke is that a quarter of the incoming student body is Catholic and about a third of the outgoing student body. And there were a lot of conversions. One of my good friends, she converted to Catholicism while she
was
there too. Praise God.
Well, it's really hard. And this is might sound triumphalist, and I apologize if it does, but it's true. It's really hard to do classical education well and not be Catholic, right? Like
all our best professors were Catholic.
That's what I was about to say.
A couple exceptions.
Because when what you're after is truth primarily, mm-hmm, right? The fullness of truth is found in the Catholic faith, regardless of how you feel about it, right?
Right.
And if you're pursuing that truth, something I say over and over, 10,000 times I've said it on the show, I would rather someone be an atheist than a Catholic automaton who just believes things because they heard it from mom and dad and their priest, mm-hmm, or whatever, without actually thinking and digging in. Because the atheist who's really thinking and searching for truth, if he's doing that, he's going to be Catholic eventually.
Right, eventually.
Right? The Catholic automaton that just believes things that they're told to believe, there's nothing there. Yeah, he's in serious danger. Because you don't have that sort of backbone of the logic and the philosophy and all of these things. So, that's why I'm a big fan of classical education, no matter what kind of facade you put on it, because if you're doing it right, it's Catholic.
Absolutely, yeah. And two things to that. One thing is that, like, I think the reason for why we, like, we'll see an atheist who's constantly concerned with the truth, and then you'll see somebody who is, like, would call him or herself Christian and then not really necessarily want to actually ask these questions and have these conversations, is like part of what it means to be a human being and a human soul is to wrestle with the truth.
Right.
Right. Like that's what it means to be part of Israel. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the same Israel.
Wrestle
to
with
wrestle
God.
With the truth, wrestle with God. And so I think that like, if you see somebody who's not doing that, there's like a recognition that we're falling short of our nature. And then the second thing, I'm really glad that you brought up the liberal arts classical education ends up basically becoming Catholic, because even outside of the liberal arts and the classical education, I found that like my best professor or at least the best thinker at Hillsdale in psychology was also Catholic. So psychology is not really one of the traditional liberal arts, but it's the professor who was the most popular and the professor who was like maybe the best thinker in the psychology department was Catholic as well. His name's Dr. Barnes, and I've been kind of corresponding with him, talking to him. And one of the things that that Hillsdale is trying to do now is to try to bring the psychology department into the mission of the school.
Right.
And so that's something I've gotten really excited about, because I think that like ultimately the goal of the goal of undergraduate education should be to form people in the truth, to like give them a picture of the truth as a whole, so that
while
it can
they're spouse shopping,
while they're spouse shopping,
right?
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Can you say one more time that definition that you had for? What did you say about the goal of undergraduate education done correctly is to do
that?
Yeah.
So the goal of undergraduate education, if you're going for the undergraduate mm-hmm. education itself, should be to form people in the truth in a way that essentially gives them a picture of the whole of the truth.
Right.
Because a picture of the whole is what's going to allow you to understand how the whole, how God, ultimately, mm-hmm. how the truth is going to apply to each particular instance in your life. And sure. the particular instantiation and the application of the truth in the particular is like the definition of wisdom.
Right.
Like wisdom is being able to take a broad ranging understanding of the world and use that understanding to make specific decisions
sure.
about like what you should do in your life. So ultimately it's to begin the love of wisdom,
right.
to begin the search for wisdom. So philosophy is the best thing to study.
I agree with all of that. My joke that I always say, I work at a high school, right? And I teach a theology of the body class, and I always give them
awesome.
The whole, theology is the queen of the sciences. So it's objectively more important than your math class.
That's right.
Like, objectively. There's no
argument.
Don't argue with me. That's how God designed it. Right.
That's right.
But to shift gears a little bit, and to go back into some of the medical stuff, and don't take any offense at this, but
oh boy,
I view psychology as like my initial take is that's just people plying folks with brain drugs, right? And it almost seems antithetical to, I don't know, I kind of want you to defend psychology as a science. Through the context of our Catholic faith.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's
it needs to be defended.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. There's a mm-hmm. lot of talk, right? I hear stuff all the time. I was listening to Michael Knowles or Matt Walsh or one of those guys recently. And they were basically just kind of crapping on modern psychology in general. And so I would love to hear, your defense of it.
Yeah. So there's some fairness in kind of like being skeptical of psychology, mm-hmm. just like I think it's fair to be skeptical of medicine. Ultimately, these things are sciences.
Right.
So if they're sciences, which means a study of something that's aimed at knowledge, right? So if they're sciences, then they shouldn't be insecure about criticism, and they should be able to receive that criticism and then respond to that criticism.
Sure.
So I just wanted to kind of like preface that. Like, I think that it's good for us to be critical, mm-hmm. and I think that we should be critical, especially of things as important as medicine and psychology. And I don't know if this is like a broader sort of division that people would make or identification, but I'm just like, I guess it's my philosophy education at Hillsdale that makes me want to define everything and categorize everything.
Got to define terms where you can discuss anything.
That's right. Yeah. And I think medicine is the study of the physical side of man, and psychology would then be correspondingly the study of the soul, the study of the non-physical side of man. It's literally the study of the soul. Psuche logos is the study of the soul.
Yeah. Okay.
So, or it's the logic of the soul, being really technical. But I think that's actually the way in for a Catholic, mm-hmm. to understand why psychology is important, even in a Catholic framework. Because mm-hmm. often we see this picture of psychology as trying to like explain away all of the beauty and mystery of human thought. And
that's my knee-jerk reaction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna drug you till you act normal. That's like what I think of.
Oh yeah. Well, there's
initially.
The problem too. Yeah.
Right.
And that's an issue that I'm thinking a lot about, because I'm going to be one of the rare psychologists who can prescribe drugs. I'm going to be a psychiatrist.
Right.
So, and I recognize as well that there's a problem with just prescribing a drug because it'll fix the problem, because sometimes that's not the best solution to the problem. It's not the one that's most fitted to the actual human person in front of you. But psychology itself, since it is the study of the logic of the soul, it's something that we would, as Catholics, be very interested in. And it's not the study of the soul in the same way that a priest can study the soul. Because a priest can study the soul with respect to the spiritual realities that bring man up to God.
Sure.
And the psychologist is doing that in one sense, but not in the theological sense, in the philosophical sense, kind of like in a similar way that you can distinguish theology and philosophy. I think you could distinguish the role that the priest has in shepherding souls and in the care of souls. You could distinguish that from the psychologist's care of souls, which is more akin to philosophy, whereas the priests would be more akin to theology.
Sure.
So it's like, that's a way of maybe breaking it up and showing that the psychologist should not be impinging upon the spiritual. And in fact, when that happens, I think that there's some like, that's a type of malpractice almost. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I think we see in some of the dangerous practices of modern psychologists, is that they start to get their practice of their science starts to become infiltrated by a religious framework that doesn't that isn't their domain.
Sure,
I guess. And so that we could get more into that. There's a lot going on there, because you get that both from the Christian side of things and also from like the Buddhist side, which I think is the most common one. Eastern spirituality is very common in psychology. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that should make us rightly skeptical, is that when a psychologist starts to stray into the domain of the priest, then it's like, okay, what's really going on here? Are you just a secular priest?
Right.
And the reality is, they shouldn't be a secular priest. What they're studying should be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. What they're studying should be closer to the kind of the studies of Aristotle almost. Mm-hmm. Now, I think a lot of psychologists would probably laugh at the idea that they should study Aristotle. But Aristotle had insight into the human soul.
Everyone should study Aristotle.
Aristotle. Thank you.
Yeah, yes. We read, it's not Aristotle, but we read the Great Dialogues of Plato in my class year, my ancient history class, right? We end the semester with the Great Dialogues of Plato. And it's all it is, you know, Plato, I know you know this, but just for anybody listening at home, right? Socrates teaches Plato. Plato teaches Aristotle, who teaches Alexander the Great, which awesome. Has nothing to do, but it's really neat. It is amazing. I remember the first time I read Nicomachean Ethics, and I had a class when we really got into that.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like my brain coming out of my ears kind of stuff.
Right.
It's so important to, and especially as a pagan, right?
Yeah.
As a righteous pagan, right? Him still using his like philosophy and logic to pick up on all these eternal truths that exist. Yeah. And I mean, he was a Christian before Christ was here. It's crazy. Yeah.
It's really wild. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Study Aristotle.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail your defense of psychology.
No, that's kind of right to the point though, is it's like, what do you get from Plato and Aristotle and from philosophy more generally? You get a picture of the human person in his proper end, and like what people are made for and what we're supposed to be. And ultimately that should be the domain of psychology to some degree as well.
Sure.
Psychology should understand what are human beings, and what are all of the parts of human beings in the human mind, in the human soul, and what are their proper objects, and how can I help the person to overcome the difficulties that are incumbent upon being a human being using my knowledge of how a human being is constituted. So what's the structure of the brain? How does that correspond to the structure of the mind? And then what does their body have to do with the way that their mind is functioning? What does their environment have to do with the way that they're behaving and the way that they feel? And so a psychologist is supposed to take knowledge about that domain of things and to help the other person to come to recognize the truth in that person's life, so that they can then build a habit of action that's closer to what is like the eudaimonia of Aristotle. What's the good life, the good way of living? That means like happiness in the truest sense of happiness. Psychology is supposed to help people to learn how to live the good life. Now the way of doing that is a pretty beautiful thing. I was listening to a podcast yesterday that was talking about this, and it's basically like, the gist of it is the psychologist wants to help the individual person to live their destiny, and destiny in the sense of like to live out their life on the path that is most fitted to them.
Sure.
So to live out God's will in their lives. So a psychologist helps their patients, helps his patients, to discover God's will for their lives. And that means that the psychologist should actually be allowing a forum for conversation and the type of direction that helps a person to unpack, what it is that person ought to be doing and who he ought to be. And
ought is a big word there, though, yeah. Right? Because, I mean, I would argue, not only put words in your mouth, that none of that is possible unless you have an understanding of the nature of man that comes from revelation, yeah. Right? Revealed truth, uh-huh. Meaning essentially you can't be a good psychologist unless you're Catholic, right? Unless you're Christian, yeah.
Right, yeah. And that's the thing that's so confusing about it and about the way that psychology approaches human beings.
Right.
Because it attempts to study them objectively and it attempts to study human behavior objectively, which is fine. But then the second that you start to treat that behavior mm-hmm. objectively, it's like, You can do two things. You can either have a discrete end in sight. So you can say like, okay, I want to change this behavior to this behavior. And that would be something where like behavioral therapy mm-hmm. would be employed. So it's like, I want to make it so that this patient is no longer afraid of getting on an elevator, right?
Right.
So that's something where it's very discrete. It's like, we can all basically agree on that without having a broader mm-hmm. picture of moral values. And the way of getting there, there's a psychology behind it. There's an understanding of human psychology behind sure. it. It gets more complicated when it's like, okay, like, should I marry this person? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's when it becomes very important for therapists and psychologists to be a psychotherapist rather than to be a spiritual director.
Right.
And that's where like kind of a really important discernment comes in, where it's like, your role is not to tell the person what they're supposed to do. Let me rephrase it. The role of the psychotherapist isn't to give advice. Mm. The role of the psychotherapist is to ask questions and allow that person the opportunity to speak about his or her identity. And identity is a loaded term, sure. but basically by identity, I just mean who that person is and what they want to be and how they want to behave and where they want their life to be. The psychologist's job is to help that person to understand himself and also to behave in the way that which he would like to behave.
Right.
And so I think that like when we think about it that way, it becomes a little bit less scary. Like in the sense that it becomes a little bit less prone to the type of corruption that I think that we're all afraid of and we should be afraid of, is that like, I don't want to send my kid, I don't have any kids yet, but I don't want to send my child to a psychologist to have his mind changed
right.
and like to have him turned into whatever the whim of the psychologist.
You hear so many horror stories now. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that you have to really trust someone to trust them with your child,
right.
and especially trust them with your child's mind.
Right.
And so the important thing there is to like make sure that the psychologist is actually properly practicing psychology. And I wish I could give some effective way of evaluating that, but I don't really know at this point.
No, dude, so. that was really great. Actually, that was really good. We are coming up on time, but I do want to ask you this before we get close. What is your, like, what is your goal? Is your plan to go work for a Catholic stay? Is it to open up your own practice? What's the next step?
I would like to eventually open up my own private practice. So I'm going to be a psychiatrist, and I would like to invite, I'd like to invite psychologists into my practice, as well as, what are these?
That's how we end.
Oh,
we
okay. End with
lightning round. What do we got? How many?
So we got 1 minute. So
1 minute.
One minute.
Okay. I'd like to open a practice and have several psychologists and therapists join me so that we can do kind of like a full practice. And then hopefully eventually kind of, build a model for people to instantiate in other places as well.
Awesome.
So
awesome, yeah,
model Catholic therapy.
Well, dude, I so appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. We're going to do quick random lightning round from Table Topics. Who do you think the most important person alive today is the one I picked. You can pick either one. You don't have to do them both. The most important person alive today. That is a really subjective question.
Brianna Sanchez.
Who is that?
That's my girlfriend.
Oh, I was literally about to say my bride, Angie Spann. I'm a big fan of her. In my very small world, she's the most important person. What you got?
That's right. What did you get into the most trouble for when you were young? So were we supposed to both?
No, I kind of like this. I like you asking me this question. I've talked about this before on the show. When I was 14 years old, I stole my girlfriend's mom's 1998 purple Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Oh, boy.
Got arrested. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I got a lot of trouble for that one with the state and my parents.
What you got? Probably just calling my sister a quitter when she would quit at the games. When I
oh, okay, that's different than mine. Different degrees. All right, that's good though.
A little bit of a goody two shoes.
All right.
You want mine? No, we don't have time.
No, I think that's all the time we got for today. All right. Thank you so much for being here, Josh. Really appreciate your time. Producer Julian, always a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen at home, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Listen, honest to God. Producer Julian.
Signing off.
Over and out.